versus Aaron James Howard, case number, or docket number 46990. Here on behalf of the appellant is Andrew Wake, and here on behalf of Mr. Howard, I'm all backwards on this one, is Andrea Reynolds. Mr. Wake, if you'd like to go ahead. You're muted. You need to unmute.
I knew that was going to happen eventually, doing this. Okay. This is an appeal from the district court's order granting Mr. Howard's motion to suppress evidence discovered in association with a traffic stop. The district court erred by rejecting or ignoring two well-established legal propositions. First, that the passenger in a lawful traffic stop is lawfully detained as part of that stop, and the detention may continue as long as the purpose of the stop is diligently the officers are diligently attempting to effectuate the purpose of the stop, and two, that evidence is suppressible only if it was discovered as a result of police illegality. Turning to the first issue, the legality of the detention in the first place, Mr. Howard was the passenger in a vehicle that was subject to a lawful traffic stop. There's been no argument that the stop was not lawful or that there was any illegality associated with the stop itself. As the officer was making the stop, the driver of the vehicle fled from the officer, ignoring his commands to remain at the scene. And while the officer, Trooper Green, and another officer attempted to locate the driver of the vehicle, Mr. Howard was detained during that process, which lasted about 5 to 7 minutes. After about 5 to 7 minutes, the officers observed in plain view in the vehicle a bag of marijuana, which provided independent probable cause, reasonable suspicion to detain Mr. Howard, quite apart from the traffic stop. So the question is whether that detention, the 5 to 7 minute detention before they observed this bag of marijuana in plain view, was lawful. Below, Mr. Howard's only argument was that he was unlawfully seized because while the officers might have had reasonable suspicion that the driver committed some criminal conduct, the officer had no reasonable suspicion that he committed some criminal conduct. So his argument was he should have been permitted to just walk away from the traffic stop because he was just a passenger in the vehicle that was stopped. The district court erred by accepting that view by holding that Mr. Howard should have been permitted to just walk away because he was the passenger in the vehicle. That proposition is contrary to all of the relevant case law, and Howard cited no case law to support it. It's a sort of mundane proposition that passengers are lawfully seized as part of a lawful traffic stop, and the duration of the stop is judged by whether the officers are diligently pursuing the purpose of the traffic stop. There's been no argument here that the officers were not diligently pursuing the purpose of the traffic stop. And of course, there's been no argument that Mr. Howard was not the passenger in this vehicle. In addition, US Supreme Court cases like US v. Johnson and Maryland v. Wilson have held that officers may direct the movements of the passengers in association with the traffic stop, and that their ability to do so is premised on the importance of the officer's ability to control the scene for purposes of officer safety during a traffic stop. Though he did below, Mr. Howard has not, as I understand it at least, contested any of that on appeal. He's altered his argument on appeal. He's no longer contesting that he should have been permitted to just walk away. The argument has sort of morphed and transformed into an argument about the manner in which he was detained, not the fact of his detention. So the argument was below was that he should have just been permitted to walk away. Now he's arguing not that he should have been permitted to walk away, but that the detention was unlawful because he was placed in handcuffs. That argument is not preserved as an initial matter. In both his moving papers and at the hearing on the motion to suppress, the only argument he made was that he could not be detained at all. The district court did not hold or address the legality of the use of handcuffs under the circumstances. The parties didn't brief the relevant case law regarding the use of handcuffs in a detention such as this. So the argument is just not before the court. And I would point the court to State v. DeVault, 131 Idaho 550. That's a Idaho Supreme Court case in which the court addressed the legality of the use of handcuffs where the argument what below was not that the handcuffs made the detention illegal, but it did so only because the district court in that case explicitly considered the legality of the use of handcuffs. We've got nothing similar here. So that argument is not preserved. Even if it had been preserved, though, it fails on the merits. Where the use of handcuffs in a detention such as this is challenged, the question is whether the cuffs are a reasonable precaution to ensure officer safety, considered in light of the duration of the invasion and the law enforcement interests served. There's no question that in the totality of the circumstances here, the use of cuffs was a reasonable precaution for officer safety. So first, with respect to the length of the, or the duration of the invasion, again, we're talking about 5 to 7 minutes before officers observed the marijuana in the vehicle and had probable cause to arrest Mr. Howard. With respect to the safety concerns, this was a traffic stop that occurred in the middle of the night in an area with which Trooper Green was not familiar. He was initially, and when he was placing Mr. Howard in cuffs, the only officer on scene. Another officer did arrive shortly after, but while he was placing Mr. Howard in cuffs. One of the two suspects, the driver, had fled and was believed to have barricaded herself in a house where Officer Trooper Green had no information about whether there were other people in the house who would help her resist any sort of investigation or arrest, whether there were weapons available. And Howard was uncooperative. He refused to provide the driver's name. He gave an extremely implausible explanation for why the driver had fled, saying that she was just trying to use the restroom and ignoring Officer Trooper Green's instructions to come back because she was trying to use the restroom. So Trooper Green had excellent reason to be concerned about his safety and the safety of other officers on scene if he were to just let Mr. Howard walk away at that point or not place him in cuffs in the back of the car. A couple of cases on point, I think State v. Frank, it's a Court of Appeals case, 133 Idaho 364, and State v. DeVault, again, 131 Idaho 550, that's an Idaho Supreme Court case, I think are directly on point and show that the use of cuffs was reasonable under the circumstances here. So if the court agrees that the detention was lawful, that of course ends the appeal and the court should reverse and remand for further proceedings. Even if the court doesn't agree on that point, on the second issue, the district court also erred by suppressing evidence that was concededly not discovered as a result of any police illegality. So Howard conceded below, and he concedes on appeal that the evidence found in the vehicle, that's the marijuana found in the bag next to the passenger seat, and methamphetamine and a methamphetamine pipe found in a backpack containing male clothing, that evidence should be suppressed, despite the fact that it was concededly not discovered as a result of any police illegality. The discovery of that evidence had nothing to do with Mr. Howard being detained in any way. Had he been permitted to walk away from the scene, the evidence would have been discovered just exactly as it was. He claims, and the district court held, that the evidence should be suppressed nonetheless because though it wasn't discovered as a result of any police illegality, the police and perhaps the prosecution might have had some difficulty connecting it in some way or tying it in some way to the defendant had the defendant not been forced to remain on scene. There's no case law to support the view that the exclusionary rule functions in that way. Mr. Howard hasn't cited any case law to support the view that the exclusionary rule functions that way. Where applicable, the exclusionary rule operates to exclude evidence that was discovered as a result of police illegality, not evidence that was lawfully discovered. Evidence that's not the fruit of an unlawful seizure is not suppressible. So Mr. Howard is asking this court to effect a fairly dramatic revolution in exclusionary rule law, that the defendant to establish the propriety of suppression has to establish a but-for relationship between police illegality and the discovery of the evidence is sort of a rote, just shows up everywhere in discussions of the exclusionary rule. Mr. Howard is asking the court to reject that proposition and he's doing so based on no case law whatsoever. So the state respectfully requests this court to reverse the district court and remand for further proceedings. Unless there are further questions, I would save the remainder of my time for reply.
Seeing no questions, Mr. Wake, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Reynolds, response?
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. The district court correctly concluded that Mr. Howard was unlawfully detained because the officer did not have reasonable suspicion to believe he was involved in any criminal activity. Now, the facts of this case are important, and the state does not challenge them on appeal. The officer observed a car pulling off the roadway into a private driveway. The driver signaled, but apparently not for quite long enough. The officer circled around in order to get the street names and then turn its emergency lights on. Importantly, the district court found the vehicle had, quote, already come to a stop prior to the officer putting his emergency lights on. Both the driver and the passenger got out of the car and walked away. The officer said, come back or don't go anywhere. And the passenger came back and, quote, immediately complied. That's in the district court's factual findings. The district court found again, quote, because the defendant would not provide the trooper the name of the driver, simply refused, he is handcuffed and put into the back of the trooper's vehicle. He was detained there for a long period of time, but at least 5 to 7 minutes prior to the discovery of a plain view of marijuana in the vehicle. Mr. Howard argued to the district court that he should have been allowed to walk away as the officer did not have reasonable suspicion to believe he committed a crime. The district court agreed, granted that motion to suppress. Mr. Howard makes the very same argument on appeal. The issue is certainly the fact of his detention, not just the manner of his detention, the fact of that detention. The state argued below that Mr. Howard could be lawfully detained for officer safety reasons, made that argument in the district court. The district court rejected it, despite the officer's testimony regarding officer safety. Again, a factual matter that has not been challenged on appeal. Certainly the brevity of the detention is of no consequence. We know that from many cases. And there's no argument that there was any reasonable suspicion directed to the passenger. Turning to the second proposition, the district court, please.
I just want to make sure I understood correctly what you said. The challenge is only to the fact of the detention and not the manner of the detention, so you're not making any argument regarding the use of the handcuffs, is that correct?
That's correct. In the briefing, we discussed the use of the handcuffs as being a relevant fact here, but it was not the focus of the arguments before the district court. It was not a basis for the district court's ruling. It was the detention itself that he was detained in the back of the patrol car. The district court did find that handcuffs were used, but that wasn't the basis for its legal conclusion that the detention was unlawful.
Okay, thank you.
Turning to the second point, the state made an argument in the district court, it's at page 51 of the transcript, that the inevitable discovery doctrine applied because of the plain view observation of the marijuana in the vehicle and because the vehicle would have been subjected to an inventory search. That was the issue the prosecutor argued to the district court, and the district court again rejected that argument. The district court correctly held the inevitable discovery doctrine is not applicable in this case. The question is, in looking at inevitable discovery, absent any unlawful action, what would have happened? What would the officer have discovered? Here, absent the unlawful detention, Mr. Howard would have walked away. His identity unknown to the police. His connection to the car unknown to the police. The car did not belong to Mr. Howard. It also did not belong to the driver. He simply would have walked away. Now, the state bears the burden of showing by preponderance of the evidence that the evidence would have inevitably been discovered by lawful means. There's no parallel path here that would have led to the discovery of any connection between anything discovered in that vehicle and this individual, Aaron Howard.
So, Ms. Reynolds, I just... let me just make sure that I understand the distinction. We're talking about two different pieces of evidence, right? One piece of evidence is Mr. Howard's identity. The other piece or pieces of evidence is the contraband found in the vehicle. Are you challenging that his identity wouldn't have been inevitably discovered or that the contraband in the vehicle wouldn't have been inevitably discovered?
So, Your Honor, that's a good question. There's actually also one additional piece of evidence, just to be clear. There's also the evidence found on Mr. Howard's person at the time of the search incident to his arrest. That was the scale with residue, I believe. His identity, who he is itself non-suppressible. That's not subject to the Fourth Amendment. But the connection between him and that backpack, that is what the district court suppressed in this case. It's that he had any connection to that the items found in that backpack, or to the vehicle, or to the stop in general.
So just to be clear, so are you challenging that the material in the vehicle should be suppressed based on the inevitable discovery? I just want to separate out the pieces of evidence.
Your Honor, I think I would rely on the argument contained in the briefing with respect to the evidence located in the vehicle. The district court found that evidence should be suppressed, didn't really articulate the distinction that you're making between the evidence itself and the connection to Mr. Howard. It's certainly Mr. Howard's position on appeal that again, but for the wrongful detention, he would not have been connected to that evidence. But I think with respect to whether that evidence itself stays out, I'll just rely on the briefing on that point.
And so setting aside the contraband found in the vehicle, then Mr. Howard's identity and the evidence found on his person, your argument is, would not have been inevitably discovered but for his detention.
Correct, Your Honor, and I think the obvious one is the evidence found on his person. Certainly, but for his detention, he would not have been arrested at the scene that night. There would have been no search incident to arrest. And so that takes out the digital scale with residue found on his person. The more complicated piece of evidence is his connection to the backpack. The district court found that was excludable because, again, it would not have inevitably been discovered. And I think just looking at a plain common sense application of the inevitable discovery doctrine, but for his detention, what would have occurred in this case?
When you say suppressing evidence of this connection, can you identify what that is? What is that evidence?
That the backpack arguably belonged to him.
Well, but you're asking for suppression of the evidence of the connection. Can you, what is that?
Well, what the district court found.
Something, it's usually a thing.
Correct, Your Honor. What the district court found is there was no identification in the backpack tying that backpack to Mr. Howard.
So I understand that, but that's not subject to suppression.
Correct, Your Honor. I think the backpack, I just like to rely on my briefing and ask that this court looks to that with respect to that piece of evidence. I think, again, the scale that was found on his person during the search incident to arrest should clearly be suppressed. Again, would not have been discovered absent his wrongful detention. The question with respect to identity and Mr. Howard's connection to the backpack, I think, is a novel one. And there's not a case directly on point that I'm aware of. And again, I'll just rely on the briefing with respect to that connection. So again, for the reasons set forth in the briefing, for the reasons articulated by the district court, I think it's clear that the original detention of Mr. Howard was illegal. Certainly the scale that was found during the search incident to his arrest was properly excluded. With respect to the backpack and Mr. Howard's connection to the backpack, I will leave that for this court to analyze based on the transcripts and the briefing in this case. If there are no further questions, I'd ask this court to affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Reynolds.
Thank you.
Mr. Wake, any reply?
Yeah, just briefly, Your Honor. So first, with respect to the detention issue, I understand now better, I think, that the argument is that it's the detention itself and not the use of handcuffs. And so given that that's the case, I think all of the case law saying that a passenger is detained in association with a traffic stop and the detention can last as long as the officers are diligently attempting to effectuate the purpose of the stop, I think that case law controls the question whether the detention of Mr. Howard here was lawful. With respect to the second issue, I guess I just want to reiterate, I'm not sure what, so Mr. Howard has conceded that his identity is not suppressible. There's no question that Trooper Green observed Mr. Howard well before Mr. Howard was allegedly unlawfully detained. He walked up to Mr. Howard and said, hey, all of that is lawful. That happened before he was detained and placed in the back of a patrol car. So there's no question that Trooper Green could identify Mr. Howard. There is a connection between Mr. Howard and the vehicle and the backpack in the car. I'm not sure what evidence it is that's left to suppress here if Mr. Howard's identity isn't suppressible and Officer Green, Trooper Green observed Mr. Howard and can identify him in court. I'm not sure what it is, what evidence at this point we're talking about that's suppressible. So again, the state contends that the district court erred in both of those, on both of those issues, and that asked the court to reverse and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you. The court appreciates the briefing and argument in this case. The case is now fully submitted to the court and an opinion will issue in due course. Court will be in recess until September 17th.
Thank you.
Thank you.